So the man I'm about to bring up, let me set the stage. I got an email from a man named Pastor Frank. And Pastor Frank said, there's this guy I know, an inmate named Dan Meredith. And he's going to be released into the Portland, Oregon, into this area. And you have to meet with him. And it was just, the church I was at, New Hope, came up in a Google search. And they looked through the staff page and they're like, outreach. That guy's probably would care about this kind of thing. That's as random as it was. A church in Portland, Oregon, and a guy who might care about outreach. That's how we got connected. And actually, to my shame, I didn't even pay attention to the first email, or possibly two. It took a couple before I'm like, okay, maybe I should really care. The first time I met him, I had to sign out like all this information about who I was, and I had to go to a federal prison halfway house. And then we drove in my Prius to Starbucks. So, like you do. So, would you welcome Dan Meredith? Come on up, Dan. All right, Dan. So Dan has one of the most unbelievable and incredible stories. You should know that going into this. And so let's start with this great scene that you laid out for me in a federal courtroom, Dan.
So federal courtroom. Colorado. I got busted by the feds. There's actually a book called Busted by the Feds in Colorado. So when I walk into the courtroom, I'm in shackles and handcuffs and the orange suit and, doing the little duck walk because you can't walk very fast in those things.
You guys know, right?
Yeah. I'm just trying to illustrate it for you. So I walk in and I'm sitting down and I'm sitting down next to my attorney, and then these other two guys walk in and they pull these tables together that are monstrosities. I don't know if you've ever seen the inside of a federal courtroom, and I hope you haven't, but they're huge. They're about as long as these pews. And they take two of these tables and they pull them together, and I'm sitting about 20 feet away. 20 feet, it's a big courtroom, away over on the other side, all shackled up in my goofy suit. And then they start rolling out this construction paper that spans both tables. And both tables put together is about from one side of the pew to about the middle of the room here. And I'm really curious what they're rolling out and scared to death. And they roll out this chronological order of them tracking me for the last 3.5 years. And now I knew that I've evaded the police many, 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 many times, but I had no idea they had this chronological path that they've been following and that they were one step behind me for a long time.
So a chronological order that stretches 20 feet falls off the end. And this chronicles what time frame? How long?
3.5 years.
3.5 years of evading the police. So, as I'm sure you all can put together, traffic tickets. A lot of them, right?
None.
No.
Not one.
Not a single traffic ticket.
No.
That's good.
Not one. Never got pulled over once.
Some people want to focus on the negatives. Speaking of being thankful, thank you for not getting a single traffic citation in 3.5 years. That's impressive.
But I drove minivans the whole time.
Yeah. They never suspect the minivan. I hope you're taking notes. By the way, because we know if there's any FBI agents, welcome. We just want to always have some idea of where Dan might be in the country. So, what was on? Talk about the 20. What did you do that landed you in a federal courtroom with 20 feet of chronological order?
I broke the algorithm to Visa, MasterCard, American Express, and Discover. Well, not the algorithm because it's like online. The basic algorithm is, but I found out and figured out through lots of trial and error what they called the inside algorithm, the variable that gave you 100% accuracy rate on deriving Visa numbers out of thin air.
So you could create a Visa card number out of thin air, and so if one of us could do that, that wouldn't give you a lot, right? You just have a credit. So what would you do with it? How did you turn that into money?
Well, I created Visa cards, but I derived a way or a method to use what's called merchant accounts. And through the merchant accounts, I could figure out whether the card was good or it was bad. And then I was able to figure out also somewhat the credit limit, not exactly, but close to. And then what was interesting about that, though, is a credit card has 16 digits, and the first 12 are what they call a BIN number. And so if I found one good account number, I could find hundreds of thousands thereafter. And it just went on from there.
So you create these, and this takes you all over the country.
Yes.
So that 3.5 years, you're not in one place. You are driving, not flying, driving.
Never flew. Too scared.
Scared of flying.
Not flying itself, but going into the airport
into the
with
airport.
Fake credit cards.
Yeah. Put that on your
9/11,
it
just
list.
Happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're driving across the country 3.5 years and you use these cards. And so just because this kind of paints the picture, let's talk about Palm Springs. So where were you checking into in Palm Springs? We'll do the first part so we get an idea and then we'll move to the second part.
I won't put any hotels under the bus, but I lived in 4 and 5 star hotels for, you know, the better part of 3.5 years. And I was checking into a very, very fancy hotel. And I had given them the wrong credit card, I think, with the wrong ID. Just not thinking. I'd become so complacent. I'd been doing this for so long. And they checked me into the hotel room. And then 10 minutes later, security came up. And so, needless to say, I got in trouble. All my counterfeiting equipment laid out on the table, drugs laid out on the table, and I went to jail.
And just so we know, talk for a second. What was the counterfeiting equipment? And
printers,
what was the drugs?
Laptops, cocaine, meth. Everything. Laminators, all kinds of credit cards. But in the midst of all of this, though, I always carried what I called one good profile in my back pocket. And that good profile was a flawless good credit card, or a few of them, and a business cards that I would make up in XYZ business, and then also a good driver's license, a viable driver's license. So I went down to the Palm Springs County Jail, which I think holds 2.5 people. They didn't have enough room for me and my equipment. They said I could have a phone call. So I had a phone call. I called a bail bondsman under the profile that I had in my back pocket. And what was really interesting to me was they were believing that the back pocket profile was actually me when I had all of the other stuff in the hotel room that was like, whatever.
Like, man, this counterfeiter's not very good. He left his ID, like, right here in his wallet.
So I called the bail bondsman up and said, I'm, you know, so-and-so. I need to bail myself out. It's $12,800 or whatever it was. And he said, okay, you need to release your property to me, and I'll come bail you out. So I released all my property, fake property. No, real, tangible, but, you know, not real. And he bailed me out of jail under a fake name with my own fake credit cards that I made.
And so at that point, but everything's confiscated.
Yes, everything's confiscated.
So you have a fake ID that now they know, mm-hmm. right? They have the name. So what did you do from there?
This is another thing that the feds coined called card mechanicking. So I walked down to the closest store I could, supermarket. I stole 50 or so those prepaid Visa credit cards off the shelf. Razor blades, super glue, and paint pens. And walked to the nearest phone booth, and I had my merchant account memorized. And then I called my merchant account because I already had some credit card numbers memorized, and then I proceeded to make slice numbers off and make about $40,000 in credit cards in about 10 minutes. And then I rented a new car, went to Saks Fifth, bought 10 grand in wardrobe and new computer equipment, and I was in Virginia in 3 days.
Mm-hmm. So off again. Now, so if you're tracking all this is a long crimes for 3.5 years of doing this kind of thing. And now, I would imagine, so had you ever been caught before Palm Springs? Was Palm Springs the first time? Okay.
No. But the identical thing happened again in Salt Lake.
So the same thing happened in Salt Lake, meaning that you're doing this, you're by and large successfully evading the police.
Yes.
And now when you have been caught by the police, you have 2 times walked out. So you got to be feeling fairly invincible at this point. Yeah. There's nothing they can do to you and you're walking around. So paint the picture then, because this is clearly you're sitting by pools, it's Mai Tais and room service, right?
3.5 years of living in, you know, fancy hotels, ordering steak and lobster and shrimp and drinks and whatever, you know, my cocaine connection would send me a quarter kilo of cocaine anywhere in the country I was, so I could check into a hotel and I knew where it was going to be before I got there. It was just super elaborate and lavish and miserable.
Talk about that. Why was it miserable?
I didn't realize this, but I had created a prison of my own. I had no friends. I had no, you know, I'd alienated my family. I just ran. And there was no time for having a cup of coffee with somebody. There was no time for, you know, I always had to stay that step ahead of whoever I thought was behind me.
And so in all that time, when you're running, you are free.
Yeah, it's called free.
But you're not really free because you have to keep staying one step ahead. Yeah. You have to keep generating new numbers. Credit cards amounts and numbers and IDs and all of that.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit then about when you get caught. And we've already heard about the courtroom scene. What was the moment when you kind of realized, like, this is a very big deal?
Oh, when they handed you a 104-year indictment. Then it becomes very real. You know, you're looking at life in prison and I knew what I was doing was absolutely insane in that, you know, I had this delusion of grandeur that I was either going to go to prison for life or they're going to offer me a job. Well, I didn't get the job.
It's one heck of an interview, though.
No, I never got the job. But I did go to prison. Not for life, but I did go for 7 years. And when they handed that indictment down, you just sink, you know. You don't know. I mean, one of the biggest challenges I think we have as a human race is the unknown. You know, when you don't know what's really going to happen. You know, your mind goes in 20 million different directions. I've seen all the prison movies, you know, and it's like, you know, what's real and what's not.
And so they hand down that 104-year sentence.
Indictment.
Sorry, it wasn't a sentence at that point.
No.
What was your understanding of faith? Understanding of God.
I grew up in a Catholic, upbringing, and I just never grabbed a hold of it. And I thought, I hope nobody takes real offense to this, but I really thought that the Bible was for a book for people to live their life by that just had no clue of what really life was.
And so, when did that start to change for you? And talk about when did that start to change?
Well, they hand you, and here's the whole cliche: go to prison and get religious. So let me paint a little bit of a different picture. Now, I had been doing a lot of cocaine for many years and daily. And when I say a lot, I should not be sitting here. So I was coming down off of drugs, you know, while all this is happening. So that's to add to the intensity. And the only books that they would allow you to have in your jail cell at the time were Bibles or whatever faith it would be. So I had asked for a Bible and I was like, okay, God, if I'm going to prison for the rest of my life, at least show me something. Show me something. And so I had not slept for about 3 days at that time because I was, you know, detoxing or whatnot. And when I got that Bible, my name is Daniel, so I opened up the book to Daniel, and I read that. I didn't know where else to go. I had no idea.
I just wonder with the delusions of grandeur, if you're like, hey, they made a book after me. That's pretty awesome.
I'm not that narcissistic. But my wife would beg to differ, though. I opened up the book of Daniel, and I read it, and who knows how to pray. I didn't know how to pray. I didn't know anything. But I did pray for peace, you know, and when I prayed for peace, I don't really remember. I think I fell asleep right afterwards, and I'd been up for 3 days. So that was my sign. I was able to sleep, that's where it all began for me, and I just had a really crazy hunger. And when you're in a county jail, it's full of people that are praying to get released. I mean, I'm telling you, it is. And I did not want to be that person. I wanted to just know God, and I just wanted peace. I just wanted to be okay. If I've got to go to prison for the rest of my life, help me learn how to do it and do it the way you want me to do it.
And so in that, it kind of starts a journey for you.
Yeah.
A 7-year journey of faith where you're kind of learning and knowing about God. And this is what I think is interesting. We'll have Dan kind of talk about this at the end. Is to be able to do what you did for 3.5 years. One, you talked about the isolation, the alienation. But the other thing is that you have to use people in situations like pawns.
Right.
And one of the conversations that we've had before is that when Dan would walk into these 4- and 5-star hotels, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars are protected by minimum wage employees. And so you would use intimidation, you would use all kinds of methods to get what you want, to work people, the bail bondsmen, the people checking you in, all of these folks that you worked. But as you came to know God, that was one of the striking things in hearing your story that started to change for you. Talk a little bit about how did that change?
God, that's a big question. it changed for me. I had been so miserable for many years prior to my incarceration, and the last year prior to that being locked up, I was wanting to die. I mean, maybe not, you know, physically but I wanted out. I was done. I was like, oh my gosh, just get me out of this. And so going to prison was actually welcomed. I was like, phew, done. And so the relationship that I started to build with God was, I'd already done so much destruction and so much mayhem and so much, and you know, I justified it in every which way you can. I mean, just insanity. And I made excuses to my parents, to people that knew me, and it was all just fake. And I wanted something real. For the first time in my life, I wanted, because I had been, man, I'd been a real turd my whole life. And I wanted something real. And when God kind of showed himself to me in the capacity of letting me go to sleep, to me, that was such an eye-opener, and it was so real to me that I wanted to take that journey, and I wanted to learn more and more and more and more and more and more. And I just delved into it, you know, and I wound up working in all the chapels in the prisons, and I mean, nobody ever called me by my name. Everybody called me preacher. I mean, it was just silly. But everybody gets a nickname in prison too, by the way. Everybody. I mean, sometimes you don't want the nicknames that you get, but you get them. My mom would send me in books. I'd just call my mom, and she'd be like, I'd say, I need a concordance. And, you know, she'd send it in. And she was just really, really supportive that way. And it built from there, and I got to learn. I really studied prison too, and I got to learn, you know, the different, because I think it was Winston Churchill that said, you know, if you really want to know the reality of society, all you have to do is go behind the prison walls, something along those lines. I'm sure I'm slaughtering it. But it's very real. Prison is very real. And the people inside of prison, it's such a concentrated, small community that you have one of two choices when you go to prison. You have a choice to, A, either become a better criminal and hang out with those people, or hang out by yourself and try to become a better person. I made the latter choice, you know, but I got along with everybody in there. It was really odd. It was a very strange experience. I got along with all the races, you know, and it's very segregated in there. I got along with all the gangs and, you know, I was in Florence, Colorado, which is the ADX of the Rockies, you know, they call it. And, you know, I don't know how to say it.
No. So
it was
so,
really, really neat.
So talk to me at the end of that, you're out and you told me a story recently. This has just happened a couple of months ago. Mm-hmm. From someone who is stealing credit card numbers, stealing IDs, doing this path of mayhem, to someone who's borrowing a truck.
A very big truck.
Dump truck. And backs into his neighbor's car.
My very big neighbor.
Yeah, a very big neighbor.
And he's Russian, and he didn't speak any English. So I was going to work at 6 o'clock in the morning. Backed this truck I borrowed from my buddy has a trailer hitch that goes out like 3 feet. And I knew I had 3 feet before the other car. But so I bumped into my neighbor's brand new car he just bought and I dented the license plate. And it was 6 o'clock in the morning. So I kind of went to go look and see if the lights were on. No lights were on. So I took a picture of it and I came, you know, got back from work at about 3:30 or so. And they own a shoe store right up the street from us. But I went and knocked on the door and he wasn't home. So I walked up to the shoe store and I talked to him and his wife and they're like, oh, no problem. You know? And I'm like, are you sure? I'll pay you for the license plate. I don't know what it costs, but I'll take care of it. And they're like, no, you good man. And I'm like, all right.
So here's why I love that story. Is because it illustrates the journey. It illustrates the point from not caring about anyone to living in complete alienation to this journey. Part of the journey of Christ is being aware of the world around you, of being aware of people around you. You dented someone's license plate. Like a license plate. This is something that you sweep under the rug a little bit, maybe, right? You don't talk to your neighbor. You avoid eye contact. But something has shifted in you. Where now you engage. And one of the other things I think is so powerful is that, and hopefully not putting anyone on the spot, but Dan's mother's here this morning, son Gavin, two of his sisters, his wife, his stepdaughters. It's amazing to be at the wedding and to see these relationships.
Yeah.
To see how God has healed and brought back these relationships and these people into your life. That this way that you have been created to be, that you were running hard from. This kind of picture that we would call success, right? Like I get to have like the best hotels, the best clothing, the best food, and it was empty and hollow.
It was sick and twisted. It was. You know, there's a line in Shawshank Redemption that I mean, I hope you guys have seen that movie because it's a fabulous movie. But where Morgan Freeman at the end, when he's like after done 30 years in prison. And he goes up for parole for like the 10th time, you know, and they've stamped him rejected every time. And at this point, he's just like, you know what? I'm saying whatever I'm going to say. You know, reject me. I don't care. I'm like 90 years old. I don't care. And he goes into the parole and they ask him, well, why do you think that we should parole you this time? And he says, you know what? He says, you stamp whatever you want to stamp. I don't care. But I look back and I look at that young man 30 years ago, and he says, I'd like to talk to him. I'd like to understand him. I'd like to shake him, I think he said. And he says, I don't even know that guy, you know. Mm-hmm. And during that just drug-blazed insanity run, I don't even know that guy. I look back and I'm scared to, you know, bump into my neighbors. You know, I don't know that guy. I don't know how I did it. I don't know where it came from. You know, I looked at it back then as, gosh, I'm doing something nobody else has done before, you know, and I don't believe it. I just don't. I look back at that guy and I don't know him. I don't know him at all. Cause I have a wife, a family. I mean, it's just crazy. It's just, you know, and I've been out 2 years and I came out and I worked for Iron Tribe. You introduced me to Iron Tribe and I worked in the nonprofit world for a couple of years and just changed jobs recently. And, but it's been a really fun, fascinating first time in my life I've ever lived.
Mm-hmm. And so if you are interested more in Dan's story, there is one ask that we'd have like to put out there. Dan actually, while in prison, wrote his story all out. So it's handwritten in, and there's a way where we'd like people to hear Dan's story. It's pretty incredible. But we still need someone to transcribe it. So if you or someone you know would be able to do transcribing, be able to read it and enter it all in, that is one thing for you or someone you know to throw out there. But would you all do me a favor? Would you thank Dan for sharing his story? And we'll do it. If you have any more questions on how to do credit card fraud, Dan will be available after service. No, that's not funny. No, it's not. Just kidding. Please don't. Here's the thing. I think that while you may not have Dan's story, there's these cycles of isolation. There's these cycles of alienation that we fall into, where we create an island. And for Dan, it was created around crime. But for all of us, sometimes we create it around work. We create it around identity. We created it by being autonomous, our own person. And what's so striking about Dan's story is the stark relief that you don't have to live like that. And more than that, you weren't created to live like that. The reason why we started our prayer time and being able to think of others, we've been created to live in relationship with others. We've been created to live in relationship with God, who gives us an identity that says you don't have to run. You don't have to fake it. You don't have to create this thing that's not true. Do you have broken relationships in your life? God would love to help restore those relationships. Have you been running? It's exhausting. You don't have to run anymore. When I was thinking of Dan and his story, I thought of this passage of scripture in Matthew 16. And it's incredible as Peter, one of Jesus' disciples, has just said, "You're the Messiah. You're the chosen one." And Jesus said, "You're right." And right after that, Jesus said, "I'm going to suffer and die. These people are going to arrest me. I'm going to die." And Peter says, "No way, not you." And Jesus has this sharp rebuke. He says, "Get behind me, Satan." It's a fascinating section of scripture where Peter goes from like, "You got it. You recognize what none of the other disciples did," to, "You get behind me, Satan." And what Jesus says after that, "If you want to follow me, take up your cross." And the next line, "For what point is it to gain the whole world and lose your soul?" What point is it to gain the whole world and lose your soul? Some of us are chasing after the whole world and we're losing who we've been created to be in the process. And we want to invite you to a journey in walking with God where you don't have to do that anymore. Would you pray with me?